Shabbat Shalom and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning scripture study coming to you live once again from St. Francisville, Louisiana. Last week, a special shout out, a thank you to my friend and teacher, Dr. James Tabor, for covering for me. A lot of good feedback on that class, and I still have a tad bit of editing to catch up. I need to post his class on the United Israel blog, and I know that we've got a little catch-up to do in terms of the notes from John Baruch Perry, who had a long-deserved break from us and his self-appointed task. And so we'll be able to update that. That will all be up hopefully by the end of the weekend. I was in England last week with David and Patty Tyler. We had a fantastic trip. Some of you who are on Facebook followed that journey, at least what we posted. All of the secret things we didn't post, but hopefully that will be evident later. But it was a wonderful time, and we were doing research related to Moses Wilhelm Shapira and the story around the scroll, which I wrote the book on, the Moses scroll, which, by the way, I see that Dr. Tabor has a blog post up about that. I rarely mention the book on Saturday morning. Mainly, I just don't want to be one of those guys that pushes the book every single day. But I will say that if you're interested in the story, check out the blog on themosesscroll.com. And you can follow along because I'm chronicling things based on August of 1883, blow by blow, day by day, what's appearing in the newspaper. I wanted to create a sense that in the modern day, you're reading and following along the news in 1883. The reason that I'm bringing that up now is because it really is a fantastic story if you haven't read it. And it ties in with a search for what Moses really wrote. And I propose that that is a candidate. I think there's a very strong case for that. But I am excited to be back this morning with you to teach a class. I miss any time I'm not behind this microphone on Saturday morning. I love to teach, and I'm excited about today's class. We're presently in our series, as you know, that I've called Honest to Moses, and this today represents the 12th class in that series. We're looking for, at the heart of this series, is a quest for what I call the historical Moses. If we were to be able to try to recover in any semblance, who was this figure, Moses, that ultimately changed the world? So we're in series Honest to Moses. We're in the 12th class. And within the broader subject of the quest, I'm going to begin to introduce something which I've touched on previously, but I've never gone as deep as I plan to go now. So if you thought we were deep before, get ready, because we're going to go on a deep dive into the Pentateuch. Because this is what drew me in several years ago into the study that I've been talking about for quite some time now. And it centers on a singular question. Who wrote the Pentateuch? Who wrote Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy chapter 34, verse 12? Now, there is a traditional answer. The traditional answer is that Moses ben Amram wrote everything from Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy 34:12. That is the standard view. Doesn't matter if you ask a Jewish person or a Christian person, that is the view. And I've touched on various aspects which question certain parts of that over the past year and a half. But again, we're going to take this a little bit further now. Today, I'm going to be able to show you things based on what we've covered over the last year and a half that, quite honestly, many of us would not have been able to accept or even to see at that time. Publicly, I began to talk about the subject that I'm going to expound today back on April the 27th, 2019. It was a United Israel conference, and I taught a class called Finding the Hand of Moses, the Torah within our Torah. In other words, I believe that within the Pentateuch is recoverable what Moses actually wrote, at least to some degree. But I also believe that in addition to finding the hand of Moses, we are now able to discern other hands and so forth. Because back in April of 2019, I only gave an overview. In August of 2020, exactly a year ago, I began teaching a series that I called Torah, and I took things a little bit further. Now, in August 2021, we're going to go deeper. We're going to go further. But it's going to be fun. You're going to love this. It's going to be exciting at every page turn. And I think that you'll be convinced that this is absolutely the most important biblical study that we've ever undertaken as a group. Now, within this series, we're going to have to pay very close attention as we're on a quest to find answers. The answers that we're seeking are going to be provided from the book of books. I'm not going to rely on tradition. I'm not going to rely on opinion. I'm not going to rely on commentary. I'm going to read carefully, strictly, the words of the book. Now, this is something that a lot of people fail to do. A careful examination, an analysis of the Bible from the words, in connection with the words, and upon the basis of the words. Now, when we do that and we're searching for answers from the text, we're going to find. A couple of weeks ago, my last class before I went to England, I talked about this quest, and it's a quest that requires us to invest our whole heart and our whole soul, and it requires us to trust what the texts say. Quite often, Bible teachers, regardless of their religious affiliation, will read something and they'll say, this is what it says, but it means something else. I'm not going to do that to you. What I'm going to do is say, this is what it says, and it means what it says. It's a much more straightforward path, I think, if you would agree. We're going to allow the scriptures to speak for themselves in order to accept the long-held answers that will be divulged based upon our careful study of the text. I am interested beyond anything else in discerning that which Moses wrote. And through an in-depth quest, through a careful analysis of the text, I believe that with a fair degree of certainty, we can find the answers to these questions. Now, there are a lot of theories out there. There are academic views which have sought to answer the questions that I'm going to put forward. And many of the academic theories have come together in the most dominant theory, and many of you know this, is called the documentary hypothesis. I'm not referring at every turn to a theory that someone else designed. What I'm going to do is we're going to look at the text, the same text that these other people have looked at, and we're going to search for answers from the text themselves. And where that aligns with an academic view, such as the documentary hypothesis, or where it aligns with a traditional religious view found in Judaism or Christianity, okay. But we're not trying to align ourselves with any preconceived ideas. We're simply looking at the text and asking questions of the text. The answers that we find will be from the text. We have several tools to use, and we intend to use them all. Some of these tools you've been exposed to in the past. So within our broad search of the historical Moses, we're now going to begin to focus our quest specifically, not in an overview like I've done in the past. I've taught classes on authorship. I've taught classes on such as the overview that I gave in April of 2019. Now I'm going to begin going into things that I've not covered in the past, which raises questions from the text themselves. So here's what we're really looking for. From the Pentateuch, we are beginning to look now in earnest within the five books. What did Moses write within these books? Again, I know the traditional answer, but we've presented some pretty good challenges that he didn't write all of it. So we're going to look for what did Moses write. We're also going to bring up with a fair degree of certainty what Moses did not write. What did he write? What did he not write? And what from these texts evinces another hand? In other words, when we read something, is there anything within the text that says, not sure who wrote it, but it can't be Moses or it can't be a contemporary? So secondly, aside from identifying authors throughout the Pentateuch, I want to look at other questions that deal with the when, W-H-E-N, the when. Are there things within the text that suggest a certain timing or a dating which may or may not align itself with the time of Moses? We talked a couple of weeks ago about anachronism, which is defined as backwards time. But I'm going to go beyond that. I'm looking for when was a text written? And as importantly, I'll be asking questions such as when was a text not written? When was a text not written? And there are a lot of examples throughout the Bible. Now, I'm going to be focusing on the Pentateuch, but there are a lot of examples throughout the Bible. I want to start with one, and then we'll get back into the Pentateuch. So if you go with me to Judges, the book of Judges, chapter 18 and verse 30. Now, I covered this in a previous class, but when I was dealing with the sons of Moses. But I want you to listen to this. The book of Judges is written as if it is telling a story from the time of the judges. And it's being written from that time. But in Judges 18:30, it says, "The Danites set up the sculptured image for themselves, and Jonathan, son of Gershom, son of," remember, it's supposed to say Moses, but it was changed there, "and his descendants served as priests to the Danite tribe until the land went into exile." Now, let me tell you something. The land didn't go into exile for many, many generations after this text in context is supposedly to have been written. So this is an indicator of another time. It's the insertion of a non-contemporary statement into a text which otherwise presents itself as being in the time of the judges. You follow? Okay. So when was a text written is something that the text will tell us often of its own voice. Here the text is telling us, hello, I'm not written in the time of the judges. I'm written at least after the exile. You get it. So when was a text written? When was a text not written? What clues do the text provide us that evinces a time other than the time that it's supposedly written? And ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness quite a few of these. Now, take a deep breath. This is not to suggest that these texts are not true. This, for instance, in Judges 18:30, I have no doubt that this is an updating of the text to let us know that when this was placed in that chapter, it's telling us that from the time that the sons of Moses were priests in this area, that they maintained that priesthood up until the time of the exile. So it doesn't mean that it's not true. Anachronism in and of itself does not indicate a lie. It doesn't indicate a false pen. It just lets us know when something was written. I want to know that. Because I want to know if we could recognize such obvious things from other periods and we remove them as we read, can we, with any degree of certainty, get back to what it said in its original form? And the answer to that is yes. I should point out that we need not be too restrictive in our definition of the dating of the time of Moses in our quest. So, for instance, whether a person believes that the time of Moses is the 12th century BCE, before the Common Era, or the 15th century BCE, or another time altogether, that doesn't affect our present study. How is that so? Because what I'm looking for is evidence of a non-contemporary hand. So if a text is written 1,500 years before or 1,200 years before, it doesn't matter. If I find clues of non-contemporary language, hopefully that makes sense. So again, I spoke not long ago about anachronism, backwards time. I use the example of the Beatles. If you miss that class, I may be the only one that liked that example, but I thought it, well, I think Mark liked it too. But I like that example because it illustrated the point of anachronism very well. We're dealing, though, in this present push in my study with authorship and dating. Authorship and dating. And I know that a lot of people have studied this and they've come to their own conclusions. And I beg you to hear me out. Even if you think you have already resolved these questions, listen up. Because we're going to go through things in a careful way that you may not have seen the things that we're going to be talking about. Today's class, I've titled The Pentateuch, Who, When, and Whence. Now, are you ready? Remember, we're looking for what was written by Moses, what was clearly not written by Moses, or we should say was written by another, and what was written at the time of Moses, and what was written at another time. These things are the things we're going to be searching for. Now, beyond these, we're also going to be searching for the evidence of sources that appear within the text. What do I mean by that? I'm talking about certain sources that were used, and this is evident. Go with me, please, this morning to the book of Numbers, to the book of Bamidbar, chapter 21, Numbers 21. Numbers chapter 21 And I want to read verses 13 through 15. From there, they set out and encamped beyond the Arnon, that is, in the wilderness that extends from the territory of the Amorites. And from the Arnon is the boundary of Moab, between Moab and the Amorites. Therefore, the book of the wars of Jehovah speaks of Wahib and Sufa and the Wadis. The Arnon with its tributary wadis stretched along the settled country of Ar, hugging the territory of Moab. Now, why did I read that verse? Because the writer of Numbers 21, verses 13 through 15, is making use of a source. And the source is the book of the wars of Jehovah. This is the only time that we ever come across a reference to the book of the wars of Jehovah. It's the only time. And it's only a couple of lines. And it deals with geography. And so what we know is that the title of it deals with Sefer Milchamot Yehovah. It's a scroll, and it deals with the wars of Jehovah. And all we have is this one piece left. Whoever is writing this is incorporating a piece of an existing manuscript into the scroll that has come to us as the book of Numbers, right? Now, it must be part of a larger work that we no longer possess. And we could speculate, but there's no reason. We just know that this is a source that's used. Now, the question I would have to kind of lead us into today's class is, who wrote this? Traditionally, it's said that Moses would have written this, right? Moses was with the children of Israel in the wilderness journey, was he not? And yet, this seems to reflect someone outside of that contemporary group. Notice, from there, they set out. From there, they set out. You know, if a contemporary writer, Moses, or someone else at the time of Moses was writing, he would say, from there, we set out. Makes sense. Now, I know that there are people who say, you're straining at a gnat and swallowing a camel. You're demanding too much of the text. Ladies and gentlemen, too much of this text? The Holy Scriptures? Nay, I'm not demanding too much. I'm allowing the text to speak. I'm allowing the text to tell me what it wants me to know. From there, they set out tends to be suggestive of someone who is writing that is not part of that journey, perhaps written at another time. Numbers or Bamidbar, the Hebrew name of the book, which is not inscribed, it's part of the modern naming system. I say modern, it goes back quite a while. But there is no, in the ancient scroll, when this was written by the author, it wouldn't have said, ye old book of Numbers. This is a name that we've come up with. In fact, it wouldn't have been Numbers. Bamidbar is the beginning of the book, and it says, in the wilderness. So it's written as if it is a chronicle of the wilderness itinerary. But is the author Moses? Was it even written in the time of Moses, during the so-called time of the wilderness itinerary? Go with me to the book of Numbers, chapter 33. I promise you that this particular class will begin to open your eyes, and the goal then is to discern truth. Remember, never lose sight of this. We are searching for what did Moses write, what was written by another, what was written in the time of Moses, and what was written in another time. So this is important. It's not meant to hurt your faith. It's meant to shore up the faith and show you the earliest strata of the text that you love and I love. Numbers chapter 33. In Numbers chapter 33, I'm going to read verses 1 and 2 to set the stage for our class today. I'm reading from the JPS, if you'll forgive the non-literal form. These were the marches of the Israelites who started out from the land of Egypt, troop by troop, in the charge of Moses and Aaron. Moses recorded the starting points of their various marches as directed by Jehovah. Their marches by starting points were as follows. Now, I've made this point in other classes. There are seven references in the Pentateuch to Moses writing something. Moses wrote this, or Moses wrote that. Seven references to what Moses wrote. And one of those references here in Numbers 33, this is one of the seven, it tells us that Moses wrote a travel itinerary. He records the starting points, literally the pulling out, like moving your stakes, your tent stakes, from station to station, right? So that's pretty interesting. But what is an observation I would like to point out to make sure that you're following this? This is written in the third person. It's referring to someone is telling us that Moses wrote a travel itinerary. If Moses would have written this, he would have said, "And I recorded the starting points as directed by the mouth of Jehovah." You see the difference? Third person, it's not Moses writing this, nor is it Aaron writing this. It says right here, troop by troop in the charge of Moses and Aaron. If Moses is the writer, you would expect it to say, in the charge of me and my brother Aaron, or something like that. Now, one of your arguments might be, Ross, but this is the style of the Bible. Moses is the author. We are going to stand on our traditional view that Moses is the author. But he chose to write in the third person. It's the way that the Torah is written. And I would say, I could almost follow that if there weren't evidence to suggest otherwise. What if I could show you a wilderness itinerary that is written in the first person within the Pentateuch? So here we have someone other than Moses, perhaps at another time than Moses, telling us that Moses recorded a travel itinerary. And what if I were to further suggest to you that this is not that itinerary? But then I showed you the other one. You'd be interested in that, I hope. So do we have it? The question is, if this is true, and I believe that it is, that Moses wrote a travel itinerary. If it's true that he wrote one, the question is, do we have it, or is it like the Book of the Wars of Jehovah and it's lost? I think we have it. We certainly have a candidate for it. Open with me to the book of Deuteronomy chapter 1. Deuteronomy chapter 1. And some of this is refresher, but I'm going into different places with it, so bear with me. Deuteronomy 1, the first five verses are not written by Moses. And you might say, how can you be so sure? Listen to me. I'm going to read them to you. These are the words that Moses addressed, third person, to all Israel on the other side of the Jordan, through the wilderness, in the Arabah, near Suf, between Paran and Tophel, Laban, Hatzerot, and Dizahav. It's 11 days' journey from Horeb to Kadesh Barnea by the Mount Seir route. It was in the 40th year, on the first day of the 11th month, that Moses addressed the Israelites in accordance with the instructions that Jehovah had given him for them. After he had defeated Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt in Heshbon, and King Og of Bashan, who dwelt in Ashtaroth and Edrei, on the other side of the Jordan, in the land of Moab, Moses undertook to expound this teaching. He said, this that I just read to you is to be tacked on to what Moses actually said. It's written in the third person. It refers to Moses in the third person. An outside author is describing what you are about to read. And then it switches. And by the way, as I pointed out before, the geography gives it away too. Whoever wrote this, not only do we know that it was not Moses, we know that it was written in another place. Because it says, these are the words that Moses spoke on the other side of the Jordan. This tells us that the author is west of the Jordan. Moses spoke the words east of the Jordan and was not allowed to go west of the Jordan. So I would tell you that what we know of verses 1, chapter 1 of Deuteronomy, verses 1 through 5, the author of this, call this person the narrator or the editor or the redactor or whatever word you choose, is writing later. It's not Moses, and he's writing from another place and probably another time. Now, listen to verse 6 through 8. Jehovah our God spoke to us in Horeb, saying, you have stayed long enough at this mountain. Start out and make your way to the hill country of the Amorites and all their neighbors in the Arabah, the hill country, the Shephelah, the Negev, the seacoast, the land of the Canaanites, the Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates. See, I place the land at your disposal. Go, take possession of the land that Jehovah swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to assign them and to their heirs after them. Notice the switch. Notice the Lord our God spoke with us. It's not, and the Lord spoke to them, and the Lord led them. It's someone who's part of the group. He's writing a travel itinerary, and he says, the Lord spoke to us, remember, and said, you've been at this mountain long enough. You see the difference. Now go to verse 19. I'm going to skip down. Verse 19 of Deuteronomy 1. We set out from Horeb and traveled the great and terrible wilderness that you saw along the road to the hill country of the Amorites, as Jehovah our God had commanded us. When we reached Kadesh Barnea, I said to you, you've come to the hill country of the Amorites, which Jehovah our God is giving to us. See now, Jehovah your God has placed the land at your disposal. Go up, take possession, as Jehovah the God of your fathers promised you. Fear not and be not dismayed. You see, this is written by someone who's part of that journey. The Lord spoke to us, said, go forward. Now go down to verse 40. Verse 40. And it says, as for you, turn about and march into the wilderness by way of the Sea of Reeds. You replied to me, saying, this is Moses speaking, we stand guilty before Jehovah. We will go up now and fight just as Jehovah our God has commanded us. And you all girded yourselves with war gear and recklessly started for the hill country. But Jehovah said to me, warn them, do not go up, do not fight, since I am not in your midst, else you will be routed by your enemies. I spoke to you, but you would not listen. You flouted Jehovah's command, willfully marched into the hill country. Then the Amorites who lived in those hills came out against you like so many bees and chased you, and they crushed you at Hormah and Seir. Keep going. Go to chapter 2. I'm going to read verses 1 through 3. Thus, after you had remained at Kadesh all that long time, we marched back into the wilderness by way of the Sea of Reeds, as Jehovah had spoken to me, and skirted the hill country of Seir a long time. Jehovah said to me, you've been skirting this hill country long enough. Now turn north and charge the people as follows. You will be passing through the territory of your kinsmen, the descendants of Esau who live in Seir. Though they will be afraid of you, be very careful not to provoke them, etc., etc. Now look down at verse 8. I'm leading up to something. First of all I want you to see here is the presence of the writer among those in the journey. Spoke to us, spoke to me, I said, he said to us. It's all as if the person is part of the journey. And it's only like that in Deuteronomy. It is not like that in the book of Numbers, which appears to be written by a hand other than Moses at a time other than the time of Moses. Now look at verse chapter 2, verse 8. We moved on away from our kinsmen and descendants of Esau who live in Seir, away from the road of the Arabah, away from Elat and Ezion Gever, and we marched on in the direction of the wilderness of Moab. And Jehovah said to me, do not harass the Moabites or provoke them to war, for I will not give you any of their land as a possession. I have assigned Ar as a possession to the descendants of Lot. You see this? This is all contemporary. Now get ready. I'm going to show you an insertion. Verse 10. It was formerly inhabited by the Emim, a people great and numerous, and as tall as the Anakites. Like the Anakites, they are counted as Rephaim, but the Moabites call them Emim. Similarly, Seir was formerly inhabited by the Horites, but the descendants of Esau dispossessed them, wiping them out and settling in their place. Now you say, Ross, how do you know that that's not Moses writing? I'm not finished. Just as Israel did in the land they were to possess, which Jehovah had given to them. Well then, Israel hasn't been given the land yet. This is an insertion meant to give us more information about these people groups at a later time by another hand. And he gives itself away. It's not trying to hide this. We've just blinded ourselves through our tradition. The text is not trying to be sneaky. It's telling us that this group dispossessed this group just as Israel did in the land they were to possess. You see? So when Israel possessed the land, they dispossessed. But that's after these events being described. I propose to you that this is a classic example of a hand that is not Moses, who's writing after Israel has gained possession of the land. Now, if we left out verse 10 and 11, would we be closer to what it originally said? And the answer is yes. Listen, I'm going to leave verse 10 and 11 out, and I'm going to read this just to show you. You ready? So go to chapter 2, verse 9 of Deuteronomy. And the Lord said to me, do not harass the Moabites or provoke them to war, for I will not give you any of their land as a possession. I have assigned Ar as a possession to the descendants of Lot. Up now, cross the Wadi Zered. So we crossed the Wadi Zered. See, I skipped over 10 and 11 and 12 and picked up in verse 13. It's the chronicle of the journey with a later update. Now, again, I want to stress this. It's not to suggest that verse 10, 11, and 12 are not true. It's to suggest and to show that we have different hands who are involved in forming what we now possess. This is an interesting and important study in order to reveal this. Now, this same thing goes on throughout the Hebrew Bible. Particularly, I'm interested in this study of showing where it happens in the five books, the Pentateuch. They're all that obvious. And I want to underscore one more time before leaving this point, Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 10 through 12 is clearly written at a time after the conquest. How soon after? Could be immediately after. Immediately after Israel gains possession of the land. But it's not written contemporary with the rest of the travel journey that I just read. This occurs throughout the Torah, as we call it. And I want you to see the difference. It's important. We have to have sane and sensible answers. This is why I can read a text that says, and Moses was buried, and I can say that Moses didn't write that. Some would argue that he did. And I don't think that that's a sane approach to biblical studies. I'm sorry. And I'm not alone in this. Brilliant sages and rabbis have come up with much of this too. It's when we become so dogmatic and we think that we are defending the Word of God by suggesting that something is written by Moses when it doesn't claim that for itself. That's not being true and upright and just and holy and a defender of the Word. That's just not being so bright. We have to look at it, allow it to speak, and tell us what it wants us to know. By the way, the next occurrence of this is verse 20 through 23. Clearly, another hand. So in this particular example, I've attempted to show that there is an obvious difference between the accounts of the wilderness itinerary in Numbers and in Deuteronomy. We see text in the first person in Deuteronomy, the third person in the book of Numbers, in Bamidbar. We see evidence, I've demonstrated just this morning, evidence of or reflecting a perspective from a different hand. Often, they are side by side in a single flowing narrative. So I'm reading chapter 2 of Deuteronomy, and I say, that looks contemporary. First person, Moses is part of the group. He says, we did this, and God told us, and we moved here, and God said this to us. And then there's an obvious insertion that says, and these people were called this by this group, this group, this group, and they just like, you see, it's clear. Now go back with me to Numbers chapter 33. Numbers chapter 33. And I want to pick up in verse 30. Numbers 33:30. Now notice immediately, you should notice this. They set out from Hashmonah and encamped at Moserot. They set out from Moserot and encamped at Beni Yakan. They set out from Beni Yakan and encamped at Hor Hagidgad. They set out from Hor Hagidgad and encamped at Yotbat. They set out from Yotbat and encamped at Abrana. They set out from Abrana and encamped at Ezion Gever. They set out from Ezion Geber and encamped in the wilderness of Zin, that is, Kadesh. They set out from Kadesh and encamped at Mount Hor on the edge of the land of Edom. Aaron the priest ascended Mount Hor at the command of Jehovah and died there in the 40th year after the Israelites had left the land of Egypt on the first day of the fifth month. There's a lot of detail in there. This place to this place to this place to this place. And this is in the chapter that says these are the marches of the Israelites that Moses wrote. Now, we have more than one account of the wilderness itinerary, as I've shown already this morning. The question becomes, is this, first of all, is it contemporary? And who's writing this? The author says they, referring to the people on this itinerary, this wilderness journey, says they did this, they did that. It feels like it's written by someone who's not part of that journey. Like from another time, later, someone is saying, yeah, and so the children of Israel, they did this, they did that, they marched. Well, do we have another example? And by the way, it mentions in verse 30 a place called Moserot. And from Moserot, there are seven stations. They went here to 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 here. To a place called Mount Hor on the edge of Edom in the 40th year, first day of the fifth month, where Aaron dies. Aaron dies on Mount Hor. Or did he? Go with me to the book of Deuteronomy. This, ladies and gentlemen, is called horizontal reading. It's where we find stories that tell the same story or supposedly tell the same story, and we compare them one to another. It's like in Christianity, in academic circles in New Testament scholarship, people will compare Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Many of you know of various rabbis who teach classes, and they snicker and giggle because they want to show that one gospel says one thing and another gospel says another. But hide the looking glass. Do they do the same with the Torah? Question. The answer is no. Deuteronomy 10, verses 6 and 7. From Beerot Beni Yaakan, that sounds familiar, the Israelites marched to Moserah. Aaron died there and was buried there, and his son Eleazar became priest in his stead. From there, they marched to Gudgod, and from Gudgod to Yotbat, a region of running brooks. Interesting. What's really interesting is that in Deuteronomy chapter 10, verses 6 through 7, Aaron dies at Moserah. But in Numbers, he dies Mount Hor, edge of Edom. Now, some would say, Ross, Moserah is Mount Hor. Another name, same place. But is that true? We have to be honest to Moses. If we want to find out what it really says and what it really means, we have to be honest with the text. Stop covering with traditional views that don't match the text. Between Moserot in Numbers and Mount Hor, where Aaron is said to have died in Numbers 33, there are seven stations. Let me give it to you this way. If someone says Moserah of Deuteronomy 10 is Moserot of Numbers 33, I could say probably. Probably is. They both have the same root word in their name, Moserah, Moserot. So I'm okay with that. But it's the ordering of the places that's divergent. We want to figure out which one reflects the actual journey. Is anybody still with me? It's going to be exciting. So if we look at Numbers 33, Here are the lists. You can write these down. I want you to have on your note page, you have in the left-hand column at the top, right, Numbers 33. And you do this on your own. I'll tell you my findings. You check me. And then on the right-hand side of the page, write Deuteronomy 10. And here you'll write what Deuteronomy 10 says. So here's the order, Numbers 33. Moserot, Beni-Yakin, Hor, Hagid-Gad, Yotbat, Abranah, Ezion-Gever, Kadesh, Mount Hor. Go to Deuteronomy. Berot, Beni-Yakin. Now, if that is the Beni-Yakin of Numbers 33, the order is flipped. Numbers 33 has Moserot Beni-Yakin. Deuteronomy 10 has Berot Beni-Yakin and then Moserot. Now, Deuteronomy 10 says Aaron dies right there, station number 2. And then it goes Gudgod. That lines up roughly with Hor Hagidgad. That's close. And Yotbat is an exact match. Numbers 33 has five more stops, and then it says Aaron dies. So there's a separation there. I'm not bringing these up to suggest that we should just push everything aside and have no belief. That's not what I'm doing. I want to get back to what did it say? And we can do that. Why, for instance, is there a difference between the names, the order of the stops, and in the important details? Why is that? Sure. Look, it would be a lot easier if Ross would say, let me tickle the ears of my audience and preach a good fundamentalist message, and the money will flow into the coffers. And I mean, that's easy. I mean, I could settle for that, but it wouldn't be right for you, and it wouldn't be right for me. How many Proverbs talk about a friend is someone who tells you the truth? I'm bound. We are bound to be honest with Moses. So we want to look at these things carefully so that we can discern what is authentic Moses. What goes to the hand of Moses to the time of Moses? And by the way, what doesn't? Now, there are a lot more details about just the death of Aaron. That's in another class. We're going to get into the different accounts and the different books of the Pentateuch, and that's a fun study too. It's just not today. So let's look at something else in Deuteronomy 10. Let me give you a little context. Now, you've got to pay close attention. Deuteronomy 10, a little bit of context. Deuteronomy 9, verse 12 and following relates the story that we know as the golden calf, the molten calf. Remember, Moses is up on Horeb, and he's receiving the 10 words, so to speak, the two tablets, God tells him, Deuteronomy 9 and following, 9 verse 12 and following, these people down there, they're sinning. They've made a golden molten calf. By the way, this story is also found in Exodus 32. Now, as we go through this study over the next weeks, months, and who knows how long, we're going to be comparing side by side the account of the molten calf in Exodus 32 with Deuteronomy 9. Do they read the same? Do they give us different details? And the answer is they do give us different details for sure. We want to know, inquiring minds. So in chapter 10 of Deuteronomy, let me look at 9:17. Let me make sure I'm in the right place. Yeah. Chapter 9 of Deuteronomy, verse 17, thereupon I gripped the two tablets, flung them away from, with both of my hands, smashing them before your eyes. So again, Exodus 32 relates this as well. So he smashes the tablets. Now I want you to listen very, very closely, Deuteronomy 10, verse 1. Thereupon Jehovah said to me, first person. Exodus 32 is not first person, by the way. Carve out two tablets of stone like the first, and come up to me on the mountain and make an ark of wood. I will inscribe on the tablets the commandments that were on the first tablets that you smashed, and you shall deposit them in the ark. I made an ark of acacia wood and carved out two tablets of stone like the first. I took the two tablets with me and went up the mountain. Jehovah inscribed on the tablets the same text as on the first, the Ten Commandments that he addressed to you on the mountain out of the fire on the day of assembly, and Jehovah gave them to me. Then I left and went down from the mountain, and I deposited the tablets in the ark that I'd made, where they still are as Jehovah had commanded me. Notice this is the first person. Notice that here in Deuteronomy, Moses makes the ark and not Bezalel or Aholiab, as the case may be. James Tabor has an excellent article on his website that's called The Other Ark of the Covenant. And if he can or if someone else can post this, a link to that article, I highly recommend it. So Moses makes an ark. He smashed the first set of tablets. He's told, make another, bring them up to me. Moses brings them up with the ark that he made. Now, listen to verse 10. I had stayed on the mountain as I did the first time, 40 days and 40 nights, and the Lord heeded me once again, and the Lord agreed not to destroy you. And the Lord said to me, up, resume the march at the head of the people, that they may go in and possess the land that I swore to their fathers to give them. Why did I skip verses 6 through 9? Some of you said you did. I read chapter 10, verses 1 through 5. Moses, come up, bring the tablets, so forth and so on. You're going to deposit them in the ark. I left, went down from the mountain, deposited tablets in the ark that I made, while where they still are, as Jehovah commanded me. I had stayed on the mountain, but I skipped three verses. The reason I skipped them is because they're inserted. Read it for yourself and look at the context. It seems to be, it is an intrusion into the narrative. It would be like, now think about it. Let's say Moses is telling this story, and then he says, put the tablets in the ark, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he interrupts himself. And he says, from Beerot Beni Yaakon, the Israelites marched to Moserah. Aaron died there and was buried there. It's not even in context. It's like an ancient cut and paste that's out of place and out of time. Carefully read it. It doesn't mean it's not true. There's nothing being said here about a wilderness itinerary. And by the way, it goes from Moses' first-person account of the tablets and how he made the ark. And then it says, from Beerot Beni Yaakon, the Israelites marched to Moserah. Aaron died there. And then, again, it switches back to verse 10. It goes back to the first person. I had stayed on the mountain as I did the first time. He resumes the story that was interrupted by this bizarre travel itinerary piece that doesn't even agree with the one in Numbers chapter 33. Hopefully that's obvious. It is an intrusion into the narrative reflecting another hand, probably reflecting another time. It's clearly not in the first person. It is another hand. It's an updating, but it's inserted into the wrong place. And we have to be careful also when we look at the chronology of a narrative. So as we study the chronology of a narrative, we have to read it carefully to know if things are in place internally. All right? So let me give you one example, and this will set stage for what we do going forward. Again, this is intended to be a positive enterprise by identifying different hands that are writing within the text of the Pentateuch. We'll be able to recognize, like now when I pick up the Pentateuch, here's what I do, and it's not because I'm brilliant, it's because I pay attention. I say this, yep, Moses wrote that. Nope, that's not Moses. Yep, that's Moses. That's not Moses. That's Moses. That he gives itself away. Because the text, here's what the text says to Ross when I read it. I was written by Moses. I wasn't written by Moses. I was written by Moses. Now, again, fundamentally, the fundamentalist who thinks they are defending the text are doing a great disservice. They're not being honest to Moses. They're not being honest to the text. I don't want people out on the street saying, Ross said this and misquoting me. And I'm nothing. I'm just a guy. But if I were Moses, I certainly wouldn't want someone attributing to me things that I didn't say, particularly if the things that I had to say were things I received from Jehovah. There's a difference. There's a difference in saying Ross said versus Jehovah said. We would all agree with that. So let's never mix the two. One example. Listen. Pay attention. Exodus chapter 40. Now we're shifting our quest just ever so slightly to say or to ask of the text, are you written in order? You know, in a broad way, Genesis 1, the creation of the cosmos, Deuteronomy 34, 12, the death of Moses. That's chronological. But all the stuff in the middle. If we work from Genesis all the way through Genesis, and we get Abraham, then the stories of Isaac and the stories of Jacob, chronological. We get into Exodus. We get the story of the birth of Moses and so forth, chronological. But within the great story that we love and follow, are there things that are not in order? Aside from any anachronism, okay? Exodus 40, verse 2. And this is where it begins. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, on the first day of the first month, you shall set up the tabernacle of the tent of meeting. Question. When was the tabernacle in the tent of meeting set up? First day, first month. What year? Do we know? Look down at verse 17. In the first month of the second year, on the first of the month, the tabernacle was set up. So follow me. Children of Israel leave Egypt. They go through the first year, okay? And in the first month of the second year, they set up the tabernacle. You follow that? It's very clear. It's dated. The text tells me this. I don't need to make it up. I don't need to speculate. First month, second year, first day, there it says it right there. Now go with me to the book of Bamidbar, the book of Numbers chapter 1. Notice I'm skipping over Leviticus completely. You'll know why in a moment. The book of Numbers chapter 1, verse 1. And it says, it begins on the first day of the second month in the second year following the exodus from the land of Egypt. The Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the tent of meeting. Very interesting. Numbers 1:1 begins on the first day of the second month of the second year. Now, this is good. Chronologically, the tabernacle has been set up for 1 month. You get that? You see that? Because we know from Exodus 40, 17, that the chapter 40, verse 17 of Exodus, that the tabernacle is set up on the first month, the first day, first month, second year. Now, 1 month later, first day, second month, second year, same year, just a month later, God begins, and the book of Numbers begins with that dating in front of us. Now, between, that means between Exodus 40 and Numbers 1, the end of Exodus and the beginning of Numbers is a period of 1 month. You follow? Slide Leviticus in there. Now, is Leviticus chronologically detailing 1 month? Well, I encourage you to read Leviticus with this in mind, because Leviticus is not so much a historical record. It does give a list of sacrifices and so forth and so on. But historically, narrative-wise, there are only a couple of chapters that provide narrative, other than, and the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, all third person. There's not a single first person, and the Lord spoke unto me. Leviticus is written exclusively in the third person. But it's inserted between Exodus 40 and Numbers 1. 1 month. Okay. Now, go with me to the book of Numbers, chapter 9. Chapter 9 and verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, third person, in the wilderness of Sinai on the first new moon of the second year following the exodus from the land of Egypt, saying, and then it goes into what he said. Now, we read this all the time, but we don't pay attention. Numbers 9 occurs 1 month before Numbers 1. I'm just talking chronology. Numbers 9 and what follows is clearly first month, second year. Numbers begins with the second month. You see that? So it's like the order is not arranged. And I'm telling you that because I want us, as we read through this, to recognize timing, dating. It's important to keep this straight. Now, look at verse 15 of chapter 9. On the day that the tabernacle was set up, the cloud covered the tabernacle, the tent of the covenant, and so forth. Do we have a date for that? Yes. We know when the tabernacle was set up. Exodus chapter 40, verse 17 says, first day, first month, second year. And then one other verse I want you to look at. Look at Numbers chapter 10, verse 11. In the second year, on the 20th day of the second month, the cloud lifted from the tabernacle, and the Israelites set out on their journey from the wilderness of Sinai. So we have dates. My point is this. We have to be careful as we study the text. We want to follow the chronology, and we want to carefully look at, when was something written? Do we have a date in the text? Is it in order with the text around it in the context? Okay, that's one question. Are there signs that another person other than Moses wrote a text or not? Is there a sign, or are there evidences that this was written in a different period? Does it express anachronism? Or does it clearly indicate, like our example in Judges 18:30, to be written at a much later period of time? By looking at the detail, by actually reading the Bible, I'd say this is what needs to happen. People need to pull their Bible off of their nightstand and blow the dust off of it and actually open it and then read it. David said, open my eyes and I will look for wonderful things from your Torah. Malachi says, remember the Torah of Moses that I commanded in Horeb. How do you do that unless you can recognize what comes from Moses? To truly recognize, to truly study requires us to search diligently with all of your heart, with all of your soul, to pay attention to what we read. Take notes as you work. By doing so, we're going to notice things that people have often missed. We have to ask questions of the text. Who wrote this and when? Look, the traditionalists will try to suggest to you that they are the defenders of the text, and there could be nothing further than the truth than that statement. The people who assign traditional views, saying Moses wrote Genesis 1 through Deuteronomy 34:12, they are not being honest with the text. They're not being honest with themselves, and they are not being honest to the people who hear them speak. They're defending a straw man, a house of cards that cannot stand. We're looking for truth. You and me. Together, we're going to work through these texts, and we're going to ask tough questions. But we want an honest answer. Who wrote this and when? What did Moses write? Let me ask you a question. What about the book of Genesis? Did Moses write it? Was it written in the time of Moses? Is it by a single author? Moses, is Moses the author? Is it another? Are there more than one hand that are discernible from the text? You know, we are going to do that. We're going to take a closer look, and we're going to look at this question about Genesis, but we're not going to do it this week. For that, you've got to join me next Shabbat. Shabbat Shalom, Shavua Tov. Have a beautiful week.